Go. We are in Mishle, Perek Yud, the 10th Perek. Continuing our, Shlomo Melech's couplets, right? His little aphorisms going back and forth between topics. Generally all the same rubric of Avodas Hashem, obviously, but with different nuances here and there. And we'll start today with Pasuk Yud Zayin. Pretty sure we did Tes Zayin last time, but either way. So we have here in Tes Zayin another somewhat cryptic couplet. Orach L'chaim Shomer Musar. The one who's going on the path of life is the one who guards discipline. So it says it here. One who heeds discipline, okay? V'ozev tochachas mas'eh. Ozev tochachas presumably means someone who leaves rebuke or who dismisses rebuke. Mat'eh. Mat'eh is an interesting word. You might know it from maybe Kabbalah Shabbos. Am to'ei levavheim. Right? A nation of wayward hearts. Here it means going astray. That's what it says in the art scroll, right? So someone who keeps discipline, who hears and listens to Musar, right? And they follow Musar. So that's the path of life. It's interesting to note the path of life doesn't necessarily mean you get life, but it means that you are on the path. So it's interesting that the art scroll here translates it as heeding discipline. Where you could understand Shomer Musar, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're actually fulfilling it. It could be that you protect it, that you value it. But definitely could be understood as like Shomer Shabbos, you fulfill it. So here, Orach L'chaim, it could mean that you're on the path of life. If you value Musar, if you value discipline, it's not necessarily the case that you've actually fulfilled it. Otherwise, then you'd have actual chaim, as we've seen earlier. The pasuk right before that, pu'ulas tzadik l'chaim, that the act of the righteous is actual life. So what's the difference between l'chaim and orach l'chaim? Presumably, it has to do with a level of fulfillment. Before it was pu'ulat tzadik, the actions of the tzadik, and here is orach l'chaim shomer musar. Now, it could be that a shomer musar is not necessarily a tzaddik yet, right? That's what gets you to being a tzaddik, so maybe that's the difference between the two. But ozev tochachas mas'eh is an interesting phrase because mat'eh is not the same as to'eh. To'eh, at least with a tav, would mean to go astray, which is how art scroll translates it here. But mat'eh is in the causative. Mat'eh means, as Rashi says, mat'eh et atzmo ve'et achirim. He's not only leading astray himself, but he's leading others astray. Meaning that if you're a person who doesn't, who actively leaves tochacha, right? It doesn't say a person who doesn't listen to tochacha, which is presumably the inverse of the shomer musar, but it's actually ozev tochacha. What is an ozev tochacha means that you're not just not listening. It's that you're there. You have the opportunity to take it. You have the opportunity to be rebuked, and you're actively disregarding it. Right? You're actively going against it. Ozev, you can't leave something unless you're already there. Right? You have to be somewhere in order to leave it. So he's there, and he's got the opportunity to accept the discipline. He's got the opportunity to accept the rebuke, and then he leaves. So with that type of situation, it's not just passive. Right? It's not just that you choose not to go to a shir, or you choose not to listen to somebody who's rebuking you. But it's that you listened, and then you rebelled. You heard person's rebuke, and then you said, I disagree, I'm going to do otherwise. And when you have a person in that way, who is more actively disregarding, more actively rebelling, so then you're not just to'eh, you're not just going astray, because naturally you'll be doing the wrong things, but you're mat'eh. You're a person who's actively not only affecting yourself, but affecting other people. Because when you do such a thing actively and outwardly, so then other people will see. Presumably that's what it means. Although there is somewhat of flexibility in understanding that. Okay. This pasuk I find to be this next pasuk I find to be sort of the most rich that we're going to do tonight. There's a lot to talk. At least the next two pasukim. Mechase sina sifse shaker. He who covers or causes to be covered. Mechase is actually active. It's not the causative. Mechase sina sifse shaker. He who covers up hatred, really, it goes the other way. That lying lips cover up hatred, or the covering of hatred is done by lying lips. How does it say here? One who conceals hatred has lying lips. Okay. Umotzi diba huksil, and someone who brings out, how do they translate this? Slander. That's a good word. Who brings out slander is a fool. So this is interesting because it doesn't seem like a contrast. On the one hand, mechaseh sina sifse shaker is negative, right? Someone who covers up hatred is lying, right? Their lips are lying. But then it says someone who brings out slander is a fool. So that's not a contrast, right? The psukim from before, we're all, tzaddik does this, or Russia does that. A shomer muster versus a tochacham, ozev tochacha. Right, they're opposites. Here it doesn't sound like we're doing opposites anymore. This one is presumably contrasted with the next pasuk. Not within the pasuk, but the next pasuk. Which is, berov devarim lo yachtal pesha. Although that itself is also negative. That if someone talks a lot, he can't hold back from doing, from iniquity. V'choseich svasav maskil, notes who hold their lips back are wise. So this is presumably a contrast to the pasuk we just said, right? Yudches and Yutes seem to be connected. It's not that there's a couplet inside the pasuk, but rather there's a progression or a theme because pasuk Yutes finishes off with svasav, as pasuk Yudches started off with svasav. So that's just in terms of syntax, in terms of ordering, how you understand these psukim together. But let's take it one by one. Mechase sina sifse shaker. Someone who covers up their hatred is a person who's lying. On a literal level, what this means is that if you're a person, you have some kind of hostility towards another person. And instead of being open about it, you're mechase, you're covering it up. And when you cover up hatred, so you must lie outwardly when you talk to people. Well, you talk to that person, you talk to other people about that person. You must have some kind of lie about them. Motzi diba huksil, but someone who brings out slander is a fool. So it's very interesting because it seems like you're going to be stuck between a rock and a hard place. The pasuk starts by saying you can't cover up your hatred, because then you're going to start lying. But at the same time, motzi diba, if you're going to start talking about the bad things that you don't like about this person, if you actually express that slander, so then you're a fool. So which one are you supposed to do? You're supposed to keep it in? Are you supposed to be mechaseh sina? Are you supposed to cover up your hatred, your hostility towards a person? Or should you be motzi diba? Should you speak about that person? So where do we find an interesting connection or an interesting use of the word diba? In the way that it's said in the Torah is dibata. I'd like to think that I would know this regardless, but it happened to those guys by Bar Mitzvah. Is that the word by the Meraglim?
Are you still? Yes.
That's the word by the Meraglim. Let's look quickly. I heard you, Leonard. Is that the word from the Meraglim?
I think so.
Dibas ha'aretz, is that what it is?
Dibas ha'aretz.
Yeah. So that's the slander against the land. Okay, good. I was thinking of one in the nearer future. Anyone know?
Is it used by Yosef?
Good.
My brother's talking about Yosef.
Good. So what does it say there? It says, "Vayiru echav ki oso avyem mikol echav." Right, the brothers saw that they were, that he was, that Yosef was loved by their father from all the other brothers, right? More. Vayisnu also, they hated him, right? Similar word here. Mechasesin ah. And they couldn't speak nicely to Yosef. Rashi says over there that this was actually a shevach. This was a good thing because they didn't hold it in. Just two psukim earlier, it says in Lamed Zayin Pasuk Beis, the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, Eila toldos Yaakov Yosef ben Shva Esrei Shana Hayaro Es Achav Batzon, right? Yosef was 17 years old and he was a shepherd. V'hunar, and he was childlike. Okay, whatever that means, we know what that means. Maybe you'd be familiar with what that means. Espenei Belhav Espenei Zolapan Neshe Aviv Vayave Yosef, and what did Yosef bring? Vayave Yosef Es Dibatam Ra'a El Avihen. He brought their evil slander to their father. What does that mean? Says Rashi, Kol ra'a shehayaroa ba'achiv, every ba'achav, every bad thing that he saw in his brothers, b'nei Leia haya b'nei Leia, at least Leia. Interesting why that's there. The Sifra Chacham talks about that. Either way, haya magilav, if he would tell about it to his father. Shehayo ochlin Avram and Achai. He would tell them that they were eating Avram and Achai. Now, were they actually eating Avram and Achai? That's what he thought they were eating, right? Different Achronim try to figure out what does this mean. How could the brothers be eating Avram and Achai? That's Usser. So this also, I think we talked about this last year in the Shir about the Golem, that maybe the brothers made a Golem, and that's why it looked like Avram and Achai, but it wasn't really an animal. Interesting concept there. Umezalzin bivnei shvachos lekros and avadim, and he called, and they would call the kids of Zilpah, Bilhah and Zilpah, they would call them slaves. V'chashidim al arayos, and he was suspicious that they were doing that they were having illicit relations. Either way, there were consequences for all of this, and. Right, so for instance, he was himself. The brothers. I think this is what we're talking about. The brothers soaked the animal in blood. Soaked his coat in blood and showed it to Yaakov, and he was paid back for telling them about the servants, or calling them servants, Yosef became a servant, and in terms of the illicit relations, obviously he had that whole episode with Eshes Potiphar. So what you see in this story is that Yosef was bringing out the dibah, right? He was bringing out the slander, and he was punished for all of it. And then a couple of psukim later, it says that the brothers didn't hold back their hatred. Rashi says over there that the brothers were actually... from their bad aspect that they couldn't get along with him, we actually learned a praise of them. They didn't say one thing on their mouth and one thing in their hearts. So here too, you find both of those. Very interesting. I don't know if Shlomo Melech was referencing back. You know, we'd have to find some kind of a Tanakh linguist or a Mishle expert to really understand whether or not Shlomo would do such a thing. But it is interesting that within these two phrases, you find both of them in the story of Yosef and the story of Yosef and the brothers. On the one hand, Mechases Sin'ah, the brothers did not cover up their hatred, right? Lo Yachlu Dabro L'Shalom, says Rashi, that they actually spoke about how they didn't like Yosef. And therefore, they weren't sifsei shaker, they weren't lying. Umotzi dibahu ksil. And someone who brings out slander is a fool. This is Yosef, presumably, right? He was motzi dibah, right? Vayave Yosef es dibasamra al avihem. Yosef was punished for that. But it is a little interesting. It is a little interesting that in this case, Shlomo HaMelech doesn't say that it's Aser. Right? Sif say Shaker, whether or not that's an actual Iser is up for debate. Whether Sheker is a real prohibition in the Torah, it's included in some prohibitions, but maybe it's not an independent prohibition for a different time. But Motzi Diba, someone who brings out slander, is only a fool. It's not a Rasha, he's not a Shakran, he's just foolish. It's kind of interesting that when you bring out slander about someone, it's not considered to be Rishus. Right, it's not considered to be evil, like it is. You know, the next pasuk uses the word pesha, which is an actual sin. The pasuk before that says mat'eh, he is astray. The pasuk before that says rasha. Right, so there are a lot of more negative phrases. A fool is just someone who doesn't know what he's doing. It's not necessarily that he's off the path, right? As opposed to Or L'chaim in mat'eh. Or it's not necessarily that he's a posheya. He's not a rasha. He's just a ksil. He's just a fool. Now, you could interpret that in more negative ways, but ksil presumably is just foolishness. So, what is it about Yosef, and what is it about foolishness? Now, I was thinking about this, and Baruch Hashem, Rabbeinu Yonah came back into the picture. I don't know if people noticed, but early on, we used to quote Rabbeinu Yonah a lot, right? Early, the first few prakim, maybe Aleph through Hay, right? The first through the fifth parak, we used to quote Rabbeinu Yonah of Gurundi. I'm trying to see where he stops talking. He's not in Hay anymore. Maybe he was only all through Dalid. Rabbeinu Yonah basically disappears after the fourth chapter. He has a couple of psukim on the fifth chapter. And then when it comes to the tenth, when we introduced the tenth chapter way back when, before the holidays even, I think it was. So then we talked about how the tenth chapter was really a new section of Mishlei. Right, it was a new sort of all this coupling and the poetry, the independent little phrases. It was sort of a new foray for Shlomo HaMelech. So Rabbeinu Yonah comes back into the picture, and Rabbeinu Yonah is a little more lengthy, but he's also a little more psychological, I found. So Rabbeinu Yonah says the following on this pasuk: Umotzi dibahu ksil baliganos hamotziim kol rucham bepihem. What is it trying to say? It's trying to say somebody is trying to disparage those who bring out everything from their mouth. They have no filter. Vim yivaun o yachshivun diba al sonam. If they think about or if they seek out something slanderous about those who they hate, yotziu es diba samra'a. They always talk about it. They always say it. They never hold back. Right? They have no filter process. And it connects this concept of saying everything, saying all the slander, bringing it all out into the open. It connects that, Shlomo HaMelech connects that to someone who covers up the hatred. Pen tomar, lest you say, right? What would you imagine would be the implication if it only had the first part of the pasuk? If it only says that someone who covers up hatred is no good, so then maybe you would think that you should therefore just let it all spill out. So says Shlomo HaMelech, no. The answer to not covering up hatred is not to let it all spill out, which is presumably why you can't have a couplet here. But either way, or it could be, says the Rabbeinu Yonah, Pen Tomar, maybe you will think, lest you think, maybe you would think, therefore, instead of covering up your hatred, you should then express everything bad about your friend. Hasina v'hadiba, right? The hatred and the slander. Al kain gina es hamotzi diba. Shlomo HaMelech comes to tell you, no, the answer to not covering up hatred is not to therefore slander him at every moment. Rather, it's befitting on the one who hates, the one who has his hatred, to inform about to understand his thoughts of hatred, but not his thoughts of slander.
Right?
right? For the women who are in the Wednesday night class, you might appreciate this. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, the Pasuk tells us in Kedoshim, don't hate your brother in your heart. Rather, hocheach tocheach samitecha, you should instead rebuke your fellow man, and thereby you will not hold, you will not carry a burden or carry the sin on his behalf. Meaning, perish, says Rabbeinu Yonah, lo tisa alav chet behochichacha oto. The way that you rebuke him shouldn't be a way that creates a sin. Shouldn't be a problematic way. Meaning, the way that you express it shouldn't be problematic. Meaning, you shouldn't hochicha barabim ulhabim panav. You shouldn't do it publicly, and you shouldn't do it in order to embarrass them. Rather, just between you and the other person. Speak to them one-on-one, without anybody else around, and without a way that would embarrass them. Speak to them one-on-one individually. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, there's a middle ground between these two poles. On the one hand, you have mechase sina, someone who's going to completely cover up the hatred, pretend like you don't hate them at all. So that's no good. You can't be a liar, right? That's sifsei shaker. That's someone who's going to lie to everyone. I don't hate them. I don't really, have anything against them. But on the other hand, you are also not allowed to be a motzi diba. You can't be someone who completely expresses all slander, because that's a seal. Then you're a fool. There's got to be a middle ground. The middle ground is to express what's going on, but to do so in a way which is proper and appropriate. And this reminded me of something I wrote about this past Shabbos in the Drasha. At the end of the Drasha, I quoted from a book, Dare to Lead, by Brené Brown. It's her follow-up from a book I've quoted before, I don't know about here, but in other contexts, it's called Daring Greatly. Based on a quote, I believe, from Teddy Roosevelt, I think. Either way, she says the following, and this is a little bit more of an extended version of what I said on Shabbos, or what I wrote out in my drasha for Shabbos. She says, of the 10 behaviors and cultural issues that leaders identified as barriers to courage, there was one issue that leaders ranked as the greatest concern, which was avoiding tough conversations, including giving honest and productive feedback. Some leaders attributed this to a lack of courage, others to a lack of skills, and shockingly, more than half talked about a cultural norm of nice and polite that's leveraged as an excuse to avoid conversations. Now, I don't know what they'd call it here in Detroit, but back in Kansas, they would call this Kansas nice. It's actually a phrase in Kansas, Kansas nice. Means that a person really wants to be critical, but what can I do? I live in Kansas, and everybody in Kansas is nice. So because of the social pressure, we've all got to be nice, right? So they avoid tough conversations in order to be nice and polite. Kansas nice. I don't know if there's such a thing in Detroit. People are nice here too, but not connivingly so. So whatever the reason, says Brené Brown, whatever the reason, there was a saturation across the data, right? She studied this, that the consequences of avoiding tough conversations or tapping out of a difficult rumble, she calls it a rumble, I've talked about that phrase before, to rumble, as soon as it gets uncomfortable include, right? What are the difficulties? Number one, diminishing trust and engagement. If you're not willing to speak open and honestly and truthfully with somebody about even uncomfortable things, so then it's going to be an erosion of the trust. You're not going to want to have what to do with each other on either side of the hostility. Number two, it'll increase problematic behavior, including passive-aggressive behavior, talking behind people's backs, pervasive back-channel communication, or what she calls the meeting after the meeting. Right, so you can't talk about it in the meeting, so you'll have a follow-up meeting with your friends where you talk badly about everybody else in the meeting, gossiping, and a dirty yes. Apparently that means when I say yes to your face and then go behind your back. Okay, that's what she said, misbehaving. That's the second consequence of not being able to rumble, not being able to have these tough conversations. And number three, it decreases performance due to a lack of clarity and shared purpose, meaning people aren't communicating properly about what they really want, and therefore people aren't going to work as well together because they don't really want to tell each other what's going on or what they're doing wrong. Over the past several years, this is the part that I had in my drasha, my team and I have learned something about clarity and the importance of hard conversations that has changed everything from the way we talk to each other to the way we negotiate with external partners. It's simple but transformative. Clear is kind. Unclear is unkind. I saw the data about how most of us avoid clarity because we tell ourselves that we're being kind when what we're actually doing is being unkind and unfair. Talking about people rather than to them is unkind. Says Brené Brown, Umotzi diba huksil. If you're going to be slanderous to other people, you're going to have some kind of hostility towards a person. So you have one of two options. You can either bottle it up, pretend like it doesn't exist, or alternatively, or this it's really the same, the flip side of the same coin, motzi diba huksil, meaning you're going to go tell other people about that person. But what's the one thing you're not going to do if you're doing it wrong? The one thing you're not willing to do is actually talk to the person themselves. If you have a problem, if you think there's some kind of hostility between you and somebody else, you have to have that tough conversation. It's not about being mean. It's about being nice. It's not about what you say. It's about how you say it. Just because there's something wrong doesn't mean you have to be nice and never tell somebody about what they're doing wrong. That itself is not being right. That's not being nice. So that's Brené Brown's whole point. And presumably that's what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying here. Rather, instead of holding it back or instead of blurting it out to everybody, do it in a way, in a context, in a form which is appropriate. On the one hand, it's between you and this other person, and it's also in private, and you're doing it appropriately, you're doing it sensitively, you're doing it with some level of level-headedness that you don't have to embarrass them or make them feel bad about it. As Brené Brown says, clear is kind, unclear is unkind. We have to be able to have those conversations. And I think, especially during this pandemic, and especially in the technological age that we live, this is something we really, really have to always work on. We always have to work on being able to have face-to-face conversations, even of uncomfortable things. Because Retza, what's our instinct? Our instinct is, if we have something mean to say, we have something uncomfortable to say, let me go online, let me go on Facebook and write a really mean post about it. Let me, write an email to that person and hide behind the computer screen so I don't really have to confront or embrace that discomfort. Or, you know, this is another pet peeve of mine. If I have a problem with someone I am dating, so let me go talk to the shadchan about it. I won't talk to the person I'm dating about it. I'll talk to the shadchan about it. Because when we get married, that's how we're going to resolve our problems. We're going to have a shadchan that's always going to solve our problems for us. Right? So obviously you have to be able to talk to a person in a serious way. Of course, it matters at what stage of dating you are, if you just met the person, if you haven't met the person, so then maybe it's not the time to have those conversations if you're not 100% committed to the other person. But if you're really trying to create a relationship with the person, the only way you can really create that relationship is if you're willing to have those difficult conversations. In the words of Brené Brown, if you're willing to rumble. Clear is kind, unclear is unkind. And that's exactly what we're talking about here. Sina, mechasa sina, you can't cover up the hatred, but you also can't be motzi diba. You also can't be, you know, revealing and talking to everybody else about how terrible this person is. Neither of those are the right solution. Rather, you got to find that middle zone. You have to find that appropriate balance of being able to talk to that person. And it's not mean to talk to the person. You're helping the person. You're helping the person be better as long as you're doing it in a way which is appropriate, in a way that's sensitive, so then you should be able to say something that's constructive for them. The next pasuk follows the same theme. Barov devarim lo yechdal pesha. If you're going to talk, so eventually you're going to actually blurt something out which is problematic. Right? If you're going to have no filter, similar to the end of that pasuk. Motzi diba, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, means you're just going to say whatever comes to your mind. So then you're going to have a problem. Lo yechdal pesha. You're not going to be able to prevent saying something problematic because you just keep speaking. V'chosech svasav maskil. However, those who are able to be chosech, very interesting word. Anyone know where we find this word chosech? Next week's parsha. Where does the word chosech come from? I think this is probably the first time in Torah that we have it. Next week's parsha. This week's parsha is Lech Lecha. So next week's parsha is Vayera.
Lo chasachta et bincha.
Very good, Shoshana. Lo chasachta et bincha et yechidecha. Right? Hashem says to Avram Avinu, you didn't hold back your child from me, right? Avram Avinu was willing to sacrifice his child. Right? He's willing to sacrifice it. It's like he didn't hold him back. And Avram says, because you didn't hold back your child from me, so then you're going to be rewarded. So to hear, we also say it, by the way, in Atachon and Tanu on Moshe Shabbos. When we say Marav, it's also in there. What's the word? I forgot. I can't do it on the fly right now. I'd have to go through the whole thing. I think it's in there. No? I think that word is there. Am I crazy? I mean, I know I'm crazy, but not for this. It's going to drive me nuts if I don't look at it. Hold on. This. Okay. Yeah, there it is. Hachel aleinu hayamim habraim lekrasenu l'shalom. Right, Hashem, bring to us, bring upon us the coming days that should be for peace. Chasuchim mikol chet. Held back from all iniquity. Chasuchim, same word, lachsoch, to hold back. Right, so we're asking Hashem that the coming week should be a week without sin. Chasuchim mikol chet, umnukim mikol avon, it should be clean of all iniquity, umedubakim biyarasecha, and it should be clinging to your fearing you. Okay, so there you have chasuchim, same word here. So here it means, in this pasuk in Mishle, it says, chosech svasav maskil, he who holds back his lips will be wise, right? As opposed to mechases inasif seishaker, the one who's covering up his hatred is gonna use his lips for lying. Here, it's chosech svasav maskil. When he's holding back his lips, he'll become wiser. How are you gonna become wiser if you hold back your lips? So again, let's turn to Rabbeinu Yonah. The chosech svasav maskil. Ha-seichel, when we think of seichel, right? You've heard seichel before. Have some seichel, right? Ha-seichel hu ha-iyun. It's the analytics, the analyzing, the analytical part of the brain. Shemagiyin mimenu el ha-tfuna. When you are able to analyze things, you'll get through that, you'll get to true understanding. Umi shehu bal iyun lahakir ha-dvarim shetzrichim achshava tamid. Someone who is a person, who is a Baal Iyun, someone who is an analytical mind, someone who's always looking around and making sure that they can properly judge what's going on. Lahakir Dvarim Tzrichim Achshava Tamid. You always have to be thinking about things. You always have to be analyzing and looking at the different elements of each situation. Hu Chosech Sfasav. He's going to hold back his lips. Why? V'lo Yedavar Davar. He can't. He feels like he can't speak about something before until ad she yishalim lo hayun bo, until he has fully formed his analysis. He's fully fulfilled and gone through the process of judging and weighing and observing and going through all the analytics. Aval hanavon, he who is in understanding, a maven, right? A mavin. He's the person who has regulated his mind to really judge and think with this intellect, right? With this analysis. He's done it so much. He's come to true understanding of the world. with most of the things that come up in the world. And through the other things that he's already investigated, he'll understand al hadome, according to similar things, right? So, right, when you've thought about things enough, you sort of plug and play. This is a similar situation, and therefore I can apply it to my situation. It's a dangerous thing. Also, you really have to understand things well. Mibli iun rav, without having to be very analytical about it, because you've already thought about it. Shehanavun mevin davar mitoch davar. He can apply things from one thing to the other. Al kain, and therefore that type of person who's already done all the analytics, eino chosech sfasav tamid. That's the type of person that doesn't have to hold back his lips to restrain his speech so much. Because he actually has already done the observations, has already done the analytics, has already crunched the numbers and really looked at the situation properly. So that type of person doesn't need to be chosech tamid. Who's the chosech? Chosech tzvasav? Who's the one who's holding back his lips? That's the maskil. The maskil is the one who's still analyzing, who's still investigating. That's the type of person who's going to hold back from making judgment, from speaking out his opinion, from always feeling the need to talk about something, because they're the one that's still analyzing. They're still trying to figure it out themselves. And when you have that humility to understand that you still don't understand, so then how are you supposed to, how are you going to talk about it, right? Who are you to give an opinion? So this is interesting based on a few things that I've read recently. I read a book recently called Range by David Epstein. There's like a byline there. Range by David Epstein. What's it called? Why Generalists... It's a very interesting title. Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. It was a fascinating book, and it's somewhat counterintuitive. I encourage people to read it because it's a different way to look at the world. But he makes the argument that there are some things which, like Shlomo Melech says, you can have sort of a finite number of possibilities, in which case the best thing to be expert at that thing, expert at that concept or expert at that field should be to study specialized, especially that field, specifically that field. You should study it very hard. So for instance, chess players. A chess player is dealing with a game with although it's, you know, almost, it seems like an infinite number of possibilities, the truth is there are finite moves that if you study it long enough, you study it well enough, you'll have such a great mastery over the different possibilities that you'll be able to be an expert. So for that type of thing where there's a finite number of possibilities, you have to specialize, right? That's the 10,000 hour rule that maybe you've heard of before. You got to specialize to really be expert. However, when it comes to other areas where the options are actually infinite, say for instance, if you're I don't want to get political here, if you're in the medical field, and you're dealing with a unique patient with a unique, you know, set of complicated, you know, not side effects, but multiple conditions where you're trying to weigh and figure out what kind of medication will affect what kind of side effect and what kind of thing can have this detrimental procedure or that detrimental procedure. So for that type of thing, you have to get a broad understanding of multiple things. You can't just specialize in one thing. Imagine if, you know, if someone had, you know, God forbid, some kind of illness that was in different parts of a person's body, but you only specialized in how that illness affects the liver, so then that would be a terrible thing for you to deal with that person's condition without talking to someone who specializes in orthopedics, who specializes in, you know, in the bloodstream and whatever it is. You have to get a panel of different experts to figure out what it is. So David Epstein's whole point here is that you with fields that are particularly infinite in their complicated complicating elements, so you have to be able to understand the full picture of things in order to compare and contrast and to build a successful solution and model of how you should attack a certain problem. If, however, there are only a finite number of possibilities to a situation, so then the more you study that one field, the better you'll get at it. So here too, says Rabbeinu Yonah, there are some things where a person might be, well, this is my understanding of Rabbeinu Yonah, a person might be a mevin, because he studied that specific topic so much that he's able to be dome, yisponin al hadomen bibli iun rav. He'll be able to understand how to sort of parallel that a situation to another situation because he studied so many similar situations. But then there are other times where you have to realize that you have to be, as Shlomo Mel says here, a chosech sfasav. You have to restrain your lips. You have to know when you're not in a place where it's completely parallel, where it's completely identical. I was reading another, but I finished another book last week, which is by Charles Duhigg. We've quoted Charles Duhigg from his first book, or at least from the first book that I've read, called The Power of Habit. He has another book called Smarter, Faster, Better, The Secrets of Productivity in Life and Business. And he talks about the importance of creating mental pictures, I think he calls it. There's a better word that he uses. We'll read it in a second. Mental models, that's what he says. The Heath brothers talk about this also, interestingly enough. They actually talk about the mental model in a book they have called Power of Moments, where they actually interviewed Rabbi Menachem Penner at Yeshiva University to understand how they train rabbinic students. They didn't do this with me, but apparently now rabbinic students at YU, they go through actual role-playing with actors. They bring in like a theater, like a drama group from some professional drama group, and those drama groups pretend, act out certain, you know, situations that you have a congregant who is going through a difficult time, who's going through an illness, who's going through, you know, a difficult situation with their child or something like that, and the actors act it out, and the rabbis have to sort of play on, you know, what they would do, how they would respond, things like that. So similar idea here that Charles Duhigg talks about, where you have to imagine for yourself, play through in your mind similar situations or potential predictable situations about what might happen. So says Duhigg over here in his book Better Fast Smarter Faster Better, if you're in a meeting and the CEO suddenly asks you for an opinion, your mind is likely to snap. Right, you'll start to freak out from passive listening to active involvement. And if you're not careful, a cognitive tunnel, right, you think very narrowly, might prompt you to say something you regret. If you're juggling multiple conversations and tasks at once, and an important email arrives, reactive thinking can cause you to type a reply before you've really thought out what you want to say. So what's the solution? This is very fascinating. If you want to do a better job of paying attention to what really matters, of not getting overwhelmed and distracted by the constant flow of emails and conversations and interruptions that are part of every day, of knowing what to focus on and what to ignore, so then get into the habit of telling yourself stories. That's what he says. Tell yourself stories. Narrate your life as it's occurring. Right? Analyze what's going on in your life. And really take stock of what's really happening. Be observant to what's around you. And then when your boss suddenly asks you a question during a meeting, or an urgent note arrives and you have only minutes to reply, the spotlight inside your head will be ready to shine the right way. Because maybe you've already thought about that situation in your head. You've already imagined that possible circumstance coming up. To become genuinely productive, we must take control of our attention. We must build mental models that put us firmly in charge. So this is an interesting concept, how it relates to maybe active listening, and how it relates to mindfulness. The whole chapter is really talking about this. He talks about how you have to imagine a possible situation that might come up. Right? Think about different options, think about different elements that might come up. And then when one of them comes up, it won't be like your mind is freaking out and trying to figure out what to do. because you'll already have prepped your mind. Your mind will already be prepped to have a door to open, right? It'll already create that room that you can access. So that's exactly what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying here, that until you create those things, you're going to be a svasav, chosech svasav. Restrain yourself from talking about something unless you've actually done the analytics. Unless you actually have gone through all the process of imagining what could happen. Once you've done that, says the Rabbeinu Yonah, Mimasha Chakar, what you've already investigated, Yisponan Aladoma Mibli Yun Rav, you'll be able to plug that back into a similar situation. I remember my father told me, when he was a basketball coach for high school in Baltimore, they were going on a road trip to play a basketball tournament in New York. So he would actually do this with his players. He would imagine games. Like, they would be on this road trip. What are you going to do with a basketball team in a 15-seater van while you're on the way to go play a game? So you imagine to yourself what's going on. And they would create, like, these game-time situations. And they would imagine, what do you do if this person does that? What do you do if we're in this situation? What do you do if the ball goes over here, if the ball goes over there? And they would actually play through the game before actually playing the game. And in that way, they'd have these mental models to link back into so that they'll be able to make quicker snap decisions. Just to finish off a little bit here, got a little carried away with some of those psukim, but as I told you, I like them. I particularly enjoyed some of the concepts there. Kesef nivchar lashon tzadik lever shem kimat, a person who is righteous. So then their mouth or their tongue is like fine silver. Rav Hirsch points out that this is referring to a person who speaks appropriately. The moral integrity of an individual is reflected in his speech, neither flippant nor abrasive, but measured and well thought out, refined and without dross, like fine silver. It's a very fine silver. It's a nicely put together material. However, lever sha'im kim'at, the heart of the wicked is very little, right? There's not much there. It's not refined and beautiful like gold, like silver, but it's very insubstantial. Sifsei tzadik, again with the lips, sifsei tzadik yir'u rabim. It's a very interesting word. Yir'u here means to shepherd. When a tzadik speaks, it will have reverberations to other people. It will shepherd many others. If you're a righteous person, you're wise, you know what you're doing. So then their lips, when a righteous person speaks, so it will shepherd other people. It will allow them to figure out where to go, like a shepherd to sheep. Ve'avilim b'chasar lev yamusu. However, with how they translate this, fools. Again, fools with a lacking heart will die. Birkas Hashem hi ta'ashir. The blessing of Hashem is those who get rich, or the blessing of Hashem is what enriches. V'lo yosif etzev imam, and it doesn't bring sadness with it. I had one other thing I wanted to say. I just want to make sure I get to it. Next pasuk chav gimel, kischok l'ksio asos zima, as mischief is sport for the evil one, or for the foolish one. Kischok l'ksil asos zima. It's kind of an interesting way to phrase it, the order of it at least. It's like a playful sport for the fool to do trickery. V'chachma l'ish tfuna. Whereas the one who is understanding, all he needs is wisdom. All he needs is to think about things, and he can occupy his mind all day. He doesn't need to do all these things, all this trickery. It reminded me of a study that I actually quoted my tryout Shabbos here in Oak Park. Whose house was it? Friday night. I think it was at Rabbi Lieb's house, although the house looked different. So not 100%, I think it was Rabbi Lieb's house. Either way, so I quoted this study that was done in 2014 where they would have people sit in a room, and there would be a buzzer on the wall, or a box with a buzzer, and they said they left them in there for 15 minutes, and people could either sit there and do nothing, or they could go, you know, buzz themselves on the buzzer, and it would give them like a shock. It would actually hurt a little bit. And they said that more men than women did it, but about a third of men and a quarter of women, if I remember correctly, a third of men and a quarter of women chose to shock themselves instead of sitting with their own thoughts. For only 15 minutes, all they had to do was sit there for 15 minutes, and they couldn't do it. They chose to hurt themselves instead of thinking. Right? And that's exactly what Shlomo Melech is saying here. For the ksil, for the fool, they have nothing that they don't feel a certain purpose, they don't feel a certain nobility in the thoughts and in the morality. So what do? Kischok l'ksil oso zima. For them, they have to do something. The sport, it's doing mischief is like sport for them. That's what keeps them going. But for an ish tuna, for a person who has an understanding, who has what to think about, who understands and feels, you know, the importance of morality, the importance of all these ideas of the Torah, so all they need is chachma. All they need is to think about wisdom. And that's good enough for them. I think about this a lot when I'm in the car. You know, how many of us always, when they're in the car, feel the need to put on the radio, right? It's an instinct. But how many of us are comfortable? I'm not saying you're not allowed to listen to the radio, but I am saying how many of us would be comfortable if the radio was off? I don't know if people who are habituated to listening to the radio have ever tried this, but try to drive with silence, just with your own thoughts. I don't know if people here, it seems like Detroiters take a lot of road trips. But when I'm on road trips, so sometimes I'm able to listen to something. Sometimes I'm able to sort of put, you know, mindless music on. But a lot of the time, I just like to think. I just like to be alone in my thoughts, especially if you're going on a long turnpike. At least Pennsylvania, you got to pay attention because it's swerving all the time and it's two lanes and there are trucks everywhere. But if you're on a long straightaway, just sitting alone with your own thoughts, I know I can think about I can think and drive myself crazy with all the creative imagination I have in my head all the time. Sometimes it's Torah oriented and sometimes it's just, you know, thinking about life. But this is what this means. If you're a person that values morality, if you're a person that values understanding the world, so then you don't need to occupy yourself by doing other things. Whether that means a shock to your body, or whether that means you need the radio, you need background noise, you need something. And sometimes I'm better at it than others, but it's something that I think everyone should sort of grow attuned to, grow sort of an ability to do, which is to be alone with your own thoughts, to not always need to be doing something. And I think this is in some ways what Shlomo Melech is saying here. Kischok l'ksil aso zima. The fool is the one that always has to be doing something mischievous, always has to be doing something. But chachma lish tvuna, a person of understanding is good enough just trying to delve into wisdom, just trying to understand the world. That alone is good enough for them. So interesting thing to end off with. We said a few very interesting ideas tonight from Rabbeinu Yonah. We saw Brené Brown, the importance of being able to rumble, to have those difficult conversations with people and not shy away from them. Clear is kind, unclear is unkind. It's better for both parties if you're able to have that conversation. True, you have to have it well, but don't cover it up and don't blurt it out to everybody else. Have it with that person in a sensitive and appropriate way. We saw also from Charles Duhigg the importance of making mental models of understanding what might come about so that you can have that that link to make sure you're doing things properly when in the moment you have to make the decision quickly. And then we saw lastly about the importance of being comfortable with yourself and not always needing to do something at all times. Okay, Mirat Hashem, we'll continue with Mishlei Perek Yud next week, and I will hopefully see you there. Okay, Shkayach, everyone should have a great night and a great rest of the week.